If you want to look at 1 Samuel 16, it's not on there yet, Sean. This is going to be the first part of the sermon. The second part is going to actually be David and Goliath. Because these two things, you can't really have David and Goliath without knowing where he came from. And as Kara was reading, you have this situation where Samuel is coming in and he is being told by God, you know, stop mourning for Saul. Well, what was he mourning about? He was mourning that Saul had turned away from the Lord. The first king of Israel, the first king that the Israelites ever had, and he had turned away and refused to repent of what he had done. And at that point, he starts walking away from God and is not able to continue that relationship because he is literally walking himself away from him. And so Samuel's there, and he's God's prophet during this time, and he's mourning because he knows what it could have been for Saul. But he sees this hard heart, and God says, okay, this is enough of this. We need to focus on the next one. And Samuel's scared out of his mind. He's like, but Lord, if I go and anoint somebody else to be king, you know, Saul's going to come over and I'm done. And he's like, look, just, you're going to go sacrifice. And you are. You're going to go sacrifice, but you're also going to find my chosen one. And so Samuel is instructed to go to the house of Jesse. Now, Jesse has several sons. So when Samuel gets there and he starts talking to him and he sees the first one, Eliab, and he's like, well, this has got to be it. Because he sees he's tall, he's strong, he's obviously developed at this point. He's a man, Samuel's like, yeah, that's it. And God's like, nope. Goes to the next one, the next one, the next one. He goes through all of them that are there. And this is when Samuel has to learn a lesson. The outside is not what matters. Anybody can fake it for a while. Saul did. But then his true heart came out. And when his heart came out, then all of a sudden it was obvious what was inside. There was pride, there was arrogance. There was no kind of humble spirit to submit himself to the Lord's work, to submit himself to leading the Lord's people. And so that's why at this point Samuel's going, okay, do you have somebody else? And they're like, yeah, I got the youngest. The youngest is out in the fields with the sheep. Which I just want you to know, that's not a very glamorous job during this time. But that's what kept the family going. This was not a rich family. This was not a royal family. He was going to find a king amongst the people that God was pointing him to. And this king was out in the field, serving his family by caring for their sheep and taking care of them. It's a great picture when we look forward to Christ. What he has talked about is the great shepherd. And we see this parallel between David and him. And then when David comes in, they've summoned him in, he comes in, and God says, yep, this is the one. He says, because I'm looking at the heart, Samuel. The heart is the key part of all of this. The heart has to be moldable and pliable, and it has to be soft for me to shape it and go the way it needs to go. And he describes him as a man after God's own heart. That's pretty high praise if you think about it. Do I ever think in a million years that God would describe me as that way? I would hope so, but knowing myself, I doubt it. I kind of identify more with Paul when he says, you know, I'm the chief of sinners. I'm like, yeah, that's more along the lines of what I think I'd call myself. But David, the thing with David is he's ready to serve. He's ready to do things, to be led by God for God's glory, for God's will. It's amazing what God can do with that. And so he is anointed there. Now, it doesn't say specifically if Samuel told the family at that point why he was anointed. You would have to think that he would have to kind of give David a little bit of a understanding of what's going on. But it doesn't say right then. But if it does, then just imagine all the rest of the stuff that's going to happen in David's life, knowing that he's going to be the future king, but yet still submitting himself to Saul and his rule. I mean, when we look at history, it seems like everybody can't wait to take the place of the one that's on the throne. Okay, you look at the Roman Empire. How many, I remember there was a couple years where they had like 7 emperors in 2 years, and I'm sitting there going, I wouldn't want that chair, because that means you're going to be off of it pretty quick, because somebody's going to be gunning for you. But David submitted himself in God's timing and God's heart. And then it moves on as the story continues. Saul is being tormented because God's spirit has left Saul and is now on David. And David, he's very talented. God has given him many gifts, and he knows how to use them, and he uses them in the right way in order to serve other people. which is very contrary to what our world says today. Our world says serve yourself. Our world says do what's best for you. You only live once, so do what's best for you. Don't worry about everybody else. You know what the number one cause of divorce right now is? That person doesn't make me happy anymore. So who's it all about? It's about me. So we look at this heart of David, and his heart is to serve people everywhere he goes. His heart is to serve the Lord, and he is zealous for the Lord. His life is in such a way that in verse 18 of that chapter, one of the servants of Saul actually says, it is obvious that the Lord is with him. So there's a visual difference in his life. And you look at it and you go, okay, that's what I want to look like. I mean, I want there to be a visual difference in my life. And so as we go on, we get to chapter 17. Okay, and this is where we have all of a sudden the picture of David and Goliath starts to come in. And it's one of these accounts that so many times people boil it down to something that I don't think it really is. It's like it's become a children's story, and it's only for kids, and it's you got to face the giants in your life. I'm sorry, I don't see that in the passage. I see something totally different. Now, there is a giant, but he wasn't just a giant in David's life that he had to get past. This is all about the glory of God and glorifying God and honoring God the way he should be. So let's look at this together. If you look at 1 Samuel 17, we'll start with verse 1. We're going to go to verse 3, and then we'll talk a bit. It says, now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damon between Socah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill of the Israel and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. I was watching a documentary the other day, and these archaeologists actually went to this place. And they can sit there and point out exactly where the Philistines lined up and exactly where the Israelites lined up, because it gives us these specific geographic locations. It says this is where it happened. And you see it, and you can kind of picture the way it must have been. You've got this ridge with this valley in between another ridge, and they're both looking down on it, but the battlefield was this place in between. It's like nobody would just come out and do it. It was a place where challenges would be met or thrown out and then either met or pushed aside, basically. But you have to imagine that once the battle lines are drawn, somebody has to make the first move, right? It's kind of like when you see two guys that act like they're going to fight, but they just kind of go in circles with each other. They never really do anything. It's not a fight until somebody actually does something. It's not a battle until somebody actually steps out and does it. Now you have the Philistines who worship their many different gods and stuff like that. And then you have Israel who has been the chosen people of the one true God. And he has told them multiple times they are his chosen people. And so you're sitting there and you're going, okay, somebody should have a little bit more backbone in this fight than the other. But unfortunately, it was the wrong ones. Let's look at again in verse 4. It says, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I had to look that up. Basically, he's 2 meters tall. Or sorry, 3 meters tall. Big dude. Okay? 3 meters tall trumps anybody who's alive today. The tallest people. Okay, and as it goes on, it says he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. Anybody have a clue about what 5,000 shekels is? You're looking at almost 9 stone. About 126 pounds. That's just his armor. That's my kid, for goodness sakes. Okay? So, obviously, the more it describes him, we understand the scale of who this guy is. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. That's basically just over a stone. So just the spearhead weighed over a stone. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not the servants of Saul? choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel." I want you to understand what that means. When he says, "I defy the armies of Israel," he is directly defying God. Because this is considered the army of his chosen people. He is defying God at this moment. He's saying, "Your God is not strong enough to stand up to me in this battle. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now I want you to understand something. Saul was not a little guy. It says that Saul was basically a chest above everybody else. So when he was standing amongst his men, he was a big dude too. He was a big guy who could handle himself. But what was it that just said in that last verse? But him and all of his men reacted the same way. They all reacted in fear. Now, if Saul would have been the king that was walking in a relationship with God like he was supposed to, he would have remembered in Deuteronomy chapter 20 that God literally gives him an instruction on how to go out for battle and how they will be victorious. And he would have been like, you know what? If he was walking around, he would have said, "All right, God has given us this promise. God has told us we will be victorious. We will follow him into battle. Here we go." But what does he do? He shrinks away. He reacts in fear instead of going on the promises that God had given. But here's the thing. This gives us an insight into his heart, because when there is sin, everything in your life will be a little bit off. You may be able to hide it every once in a while, but when there's sin involved, eventually things will come out and you will see that things are off. Saul's response was like a man of no faith in God. He was cowering, he was withered back, and he was fearful. Does this sound like a king you want to follow? I mean, when we think about our leaders, we want somebody who's going to be strong and portray strength for our country, right? We want somebody that's going to lead well. And here the Israelites have the first king, and what does he do? He wants to go hide in his tent. He literally wants to go hide in his tent because there's a big guy out there. Now, at the same time, Jesse tells David, you know, take some supplies to your older brothers. And so he prepares this cart, this wagon, takes it out, and he goes out there. Because at this point, all the soldiers have to provide their own provisions, their own rations. Okay, so David gets out there. And as he gets there, he hands the stuff over to the guy who's in charge of the rations and stuff like that. And then he kind of goes to try to find his brothers. And it just happens to be right when Goliath comes out to make his challenge. And David hears this. David not only hears this, but he's disgusted by it. Because to David, he wasn't challenging the armies of Israel. He was challenging the Lord. He was taking it personally because this Philistine was then going after his God, the God of Israel. All the army reacts as if God is not on their side. They act as if God's promises are not still true, except David. He knows that what Goliath has done is more than just taunt the Israelites. He challenged the Lord directly. In verse 26, it says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that they should defy the armies of the living God?" Basically, what he's saying is, who is this sinner that thinks he can challenge God? To David, in David's mind, this is Goliath standing in front of God going, "What are you going to do about it?" Now, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be brave enough to do that. But that's exactly what is happening here. To David, this is about the honor and glory of the Lord. It's something that has to be done for the glory of the Lord. And so in his heart, he begins to find out things right away. Because he hears some of the guys going, "Hey, you know what? If somebody goes and fights this guy and wins, his family won't have to pay taxes for the rest of their lives. And he's going to give you one of his daughters to marry," and all this. And David's going, "Wait, what? Who? He's doing what?" Saul is acting like, "I'll give you prize money to go and defend the Lord here." And David doesn't like that. And so David's asking these questions. And the first thing that happens when David decides to act for the glory of the Lord, discouragement comes right in. It's his brother. Of course it's his brother. You know, brothers, they can be great. They can be a pain. But the brother says this. He goes, he's like, you know what? I know what's really in your heart. You just came out here to see the battle and everything. And he starts trying to discourage him. He basically tells him off. And David could have stopped right there with just the discouragement from his brother. But he's more worried about the glory of God. Saul finds out about what David has been asking and saying, and he calls for him. Instead of seeing that the Lord is being honored by David, Saul responds with more discouragement. Saul says this, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." Now, we don't specifically know how old David was when this happened, but he was young enough to be recognized as a young man. Most people think it's below 15. In fact, when he ends up going out against Goliath, he calls him a boy. So obviously, this is something where he looks young enough, okay? But David doesn't care about his age. David cares about whether or not is God going to be defended and glorified or not. So David replies to Saul by stating what God has already been doing all along in his life. Remember, David was a shepherd. Okay, and when David was out there with his sheep, he had to protect them from things that were going to come and attack the sheep and carry them off. Specifically, he names a lion and a bear. Okay, and he says, you know what? When they try to carry it off, I would have to go after them, attack it, kill it, and bring my sheep back. Because that's what a shepherd does. And in his mind, God had been preparing him the whole time. He's looking at the lion and the bear. He looks at Goliath. He goes, this is just another big dumb animal. Because God's the one in control. God's the one who has been preparing me for these moments. Because God is the one who deserves the honor. God is the one who deserves the glory. So he looks at Saul with this face like, probably like, why aren't you getting this? To David, he is sure that God is on his side. To David, there is only one answer. God must be glorified in this. To David, this was not a battle between two men, but the battle between the Lord and all the gods of the Philistines. Because the Philistines had a few. It wasn't just one god. They worshipped a bunch of them. So David's going, okay, this is all of them against God. Who's going to win out? Who's going to show up? Because when we look at it, humanly speaking, David had no possible way of beating a seasoned warrior who was probably double his height and could handle a spear in a way that was just probably not your normal handling of a spear. I mean, the guy basically would be throwing a rod with a one stone iron head on it. This guy knew what he was doing. Humanly speaking, it doesn't make any sense. It'd be like me putting up one of my kids against Anthony Joshua in a ring going, hey, have at it. I don't think that's going to end well. But see, God is in this picture. God is the one here. Saul does all that he can to do what he thinks he should do. So he tries to give him armor. He tries to give him weapons and stuff like that. And David puts this on and he's like, I'm not going to use this. I can't move around in this. Think about it. This is Saul's armor and he's putting it on a young teenage boy probably. And all of a sudden, I mean, he had to look a little bit funny. But how's he going to fight in that? To Saul, because the sin and everything else was so off in his head, that he thinks that this is going to protect him from Goliath. The best armor wouldn't do that. And he realizes, David goes, no, this is not going to work. God's been faithful in the past and he will be faithful again. So what does he take? He takes a staff, which is basically a stick. And he gets some rocks, some stones out of a brook. The cool thing on this documentary, when you go there, you can still see the path of the brook. And it's still got the smooth stones in there. Even now. And he gets these five stones because this is what he used when God was faithful before. When the lions and the bears or any other animals came to his flock, this is what he used to defend them. This is what he used to serve his family by defending the sheep. And he is sure that God will be faithful again. He doesn't waver. Let's look at 1 Samuel 17, and we're going to read all the way from verse 40 to 52. It says, then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. Goliath must have been a pretty ugly guy because he just despised him because he was good looking, I guess. But he comes out there and he's just like, he felt, he must have probably felt like this is the best you can give me. Little did Goliath know. Verse 43, it says, he said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give your carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Now notice, he didn't say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He said, the Lord's going to do this, the Lord's going to do that. So who is he talking up here? He's not talking up himself. He's talking up the Lord. He's specifically telling Goliath, you're going to lose here, and this is why, and this is who's doing it. We can see David's heart by his reply. The Lord is the center point of his argument. The Lord is the center point of what he's saying. That is what's most important to him. It says, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. He didn't step back when the Goliath started coming towards him. He went to him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from its sheath. And after he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sharim road to Gath and Ekron. Now, who was it that was in control there? Was it David? No. I'm sure David was a pretty good shot with that sling, but not that good. And when we look all throughout, we see David talking about the glory of the Lord. We see David talking about how he needs to be glorified in this and he needs to have the honor in this. And that is the focus of David's heart and his life right now. Hudson Taylor, who started one of the largest movements in China with the, it's completely slipped my mind now. Is it the China Inland Mission? There we go. Thanks. He said this. He said, all God's giants have been weak men who did great things for God because they reckoned on his being with them. Saying all of the people that we look at in the scriptures as giants of faith or something like that, they were all weak men. And in their weakness, God was their strength. He was the one that allowed them to do the big things. I remember when I was younger, my grandfather was a missionary in Peru, 57 years. And I got to go down a few times and see some of the works that they had started and everything, and I got to see how many things had happened after they had been there. And my grandfather looked at me, he said, when I first came to Peru, he said, I prayed one thing. that God would do something so big that they knew a man could not have done it. And when he first told me that, I didn't get it. And then when I got down there, I realized what he was meaning. He didn't want him to be the one that people focused on. He wanted God to be the one that people focused on. This was something so big between David and Goliath that there was no way that David should have been able to win. But God was his strength. God was the one holding him up. God was the one being faithful to him. And we'll see that as we go on through David's life. This battle was not David's to win, it was the Lord's. David knew this and submitted his whole life to honoring and glorifying God. That's why when we read the Psalms, we see David cry out sometimes, and we see David, all the different situations, whether it was a good situation or bad situation, the circumstances didn't change. I mean, changed, but he went to the Lord in these moments, both the good and the bad. If our goal is God's glory, then we can't go wrong if we're doing right. If that is our goal, if God's glory in our life is the goal that we have, we cannot go wrong because it will focus us on the right things to do. So I guess the question for us today is this: what are our goals? What are our priorities? What is our focus point? If it's God, if it's a relationship with Jesus, and we're walking in that, great. If it's trying to figure out how can I balance out the world and God, you're going to fall. And if it's, hey, I'm going to go do it the world's way, if the world had it figured out, why is everything so messed up? If the world has the answers, why is anxiety, depression, suicide, all these different things on such a rise right now in our culture? It's no surprise to me that the more people walk away from the Lord, the more mental health issues we have. So that's why I say, what is our focus? What is the desire of our hearts? For people many times misunderstand the verse that talks about, you know, God will give us the desires of our hearts. Yes, but the thing is this, if we're walking in close relationship with God, our desires begin to change because they begin to mirror what God's desires are. And then, yeah, he gives it to us. Does that mean everything's going to be easy? No. We'll look at David's life and we'll see many times from the time he was anointed to the time he actually becomes king, there are circumstances that go crazy in his life. But yet he remains faithful following God because he is the center point. So as we walk out today, all of us, let's all look and say, okay, Lord, what is it that my focus is? Am I off? But be ready for God to answer that. Don't ask it if you don't want the answer. See, one of the things that people don't realize, when we're working on a talk with Chris or Jeff or Aaron or myself or somebody, we have to go through this kind of stuff for ourselves first. We have to preach it to ourselves first. We have to sit there and say, okay, am I doing this? So this isn't just a thing I'm telling you. This is a thing I've told myself already. If we don't have Christ at the center point of our life, if we don't have that relationship first and foremost, then we're off, which will make everything else go off too. So here's my challenge. Maybe you have a hard time with consistency with reading, and you want somebody to kind of do a one-to-one. Let us know. Let us know so we can do a one-to-one Bible study together. Or if you say, oh, well, there's some things where I just want to be able to read more consistently, come ask me. There's a great app that I've used many times, and it's helped me. It's helped others. Let me know. And it has different reading plans and different things that you can follow. But David was able to stand up to Goliath because he was walking with God. Because he had submitted himself humbly to God. The best thing we can give God is a humble, broken, and contrite heart, which is what we see with David here. All right, let's pray.